Hi and welcome to Matrix Moments. I'm Akash, and today with me I have Andrew, who is a VP at Blockdaemon. We're going to talk more, a lot more about the future of staking, selling and building a business in enterprise in the domain of Web3. But before we start off with that, let me introduce Andrew. Hi, Andrew.
Hi.
Andrew and I had the pleasure of getting connected when he used to lead the startup ecosystem at AWS. Earlier this year, you joined Blockdaemon.
January this year. Yeah.
Pretty much the same time I joined Matrix.
Yeah. And good timing.
We had some interesting exchanges before. We used to do a lot of collaboration in backing early stage founders. So Andrew, how was the move? Like, when you decided, you'd been involved with crypto for a long time, but what led to that final moment of decision of actually switching over from AWS?
Yeah. So firstly, thanks for having me. It's good to catch up. It's great to be back in Bangalore.
Yes.
So it's actually an interesting story. And I do think Amazon, AWS is an amazing company. And I do think the best MBA around is the MBA of Jeff Bezos.
Yeah, true.
But, you know, I'd done 5.5 years, so I was starting to think about what's next. And then, you know, I'm one of these guys, I'm not the smartest guy, so I kind of work out what I know, and like, and I look for things that kind of fit well. So I was speaking with a couple of close friends. A couple of them are very deep in crypto. A couple of them, one of them was like, hey, look, I'm going to get you something in crypto. Like, I know you, I know what you're good at, leave it with me. And then I've also got a friend in recruitment. I've known him for a long time.
Yeah.
And I just said, look, start to have a look. I'm not a trader. I don't have a finance background, so I can't play on that side. But I have an infrastructure, tech, leadership background, so let's see. And then what happened is two things happened. The recruiter came back and said, I like this company, Blockdaemon, you need to look at it. And then my friend came back and said, one of my buddies is the advisor to the leadership team, you need to look at it. So I was like, okay, I think I need to take this opportunity pretty seriously.
Nice.
And yeah, I was fortunate enough last year to have conversations with the CEO and the leadership team, and really Blockdaemon for me and my skill set in my career, and also sort of like my bit of my personal investing, where I'm a sort of buy and hold type person, I'm not a trader. Blockdaemon presented this unique opportunity of Web3, but the infrastructure. So infrastructure, node, blockchain, and something that I was personally interested in, which is, you know, staking of Gen3 POS chains. And, you know, that sort of tooling, API, SDK, you know, developer kind of capabilities. So I think, like, I was lucky. It all just converged on multiple angles. You know, Blockdaemon is a category leader in what it does. Fantastic conversations with the leadership team. So it was just really a no-brainer.
Actually, I'll pick more on that one, right? So yeah. Talk to us more about Blockdaemon. Like, what was the genesis and the beginning? Yeah. And then today, what is it that Blockdaemon does for its customers?
Yeah. Yeah, so Blockdaemon's been around for coming up to 5 years, a bit over 4.5. Started life in nodes as a service, right? So essentially a node is usually, not always, it's a server, virtual machine, and it's running the blockchain protocol. So it basically that's what a node is in essence,
yeah.
Right? So it started life offering institutional grade nodes to people that needed high performance, enterprise grade nodes. And so it's going along, it's selling a lot of nodes, it's doing a lot of work, it's doing some permission stuff for enterprise, you know, Hyperledger, it's doing some Ethereum, you know, it's doing this. And then, you know, it's caught very early, you know, the Gen3 chains,
yeah.
POS, and then moved into staking for institutions as well. And then that's helped really move its trajectory. So nodes, first line of business, in a very much a dedicated high-end enterprise kind of model, then staking. And then it's realized also on its journey through interactions with enterprise, it needs an API-centric model as well. Because some institutions will go, no, I need a node, I'm going to smash millions of transactions a day, I want to control that, I want an SLA. But hey, these protocols, I'm testing, I'm learning.
Got it.
Like, it's fluid, it's dynamic, I'm not ready to lock in a commitment. So then it's built out an API suite. In addition, what we've done is we actually acquired a company called Gem, and that gave us fiat to crypto payment gateway and Rails as well. And recently we've acquired a key management company out of Denmark called Sepior. So now we've got this ability to on-ramp, provide blockchain access, dedicated or multi-tenant, provide staking infrastructure, and we've got a rich suite of APIs and SDKs. So we've started to move from a product into a sort of a platform approach.
Got it.
Yep.
And you joined them to lead APAC. And when you think of your last few months there, what were the challenges in building this ecosystem out in APAC?
I think, you know this, right? APAC is very diverse. We have, you know, my mental model for APAC is we're one step into the future on many things, and we're also one step in the past. And depending on what you're working on, it could be one or the other, right? So I think I was fortunate enough that Block Daemon already had some fantastic APAC customers to build off. Some of the very established crypto funds like Fembushi and Dragonfly and Hashkey have been long-time investors and partners for us. So I came on board, there was a base. I want to be clear, I wasn't starting from zero. I started in January, me and a laptop. We're about a dozen people now. And, you know, we've been able to talk to the largest players on the exchange side, the fund side, you know, the traditional finance coming into crypto side, the foundation, L1, L2, Oracle, large DeFi protocols and projects. We're really talking to the largest players across all those categories as well.
So across those categories, and you mentioned traditional players, right? In your experience, is that a different go-to-market motion? Or is it not too different from when you're talking to crypto natives?
I think that's a loaded question. It's very different, right? So crypto native is speed, right? Speed and trust. So there's a lot of things that they're going to want to move quickly on. So they're looking for the right partner. They're looking for social network validation. But they're not looking to go through, like, you know, 100-page documents and, like, these sorts of things. So I think, you know, they will look for validation on who else is working with somebody like Block Daemon, and you can move pretty fast. You know, I've got to hand it to the traditional, like, TradFi FSI guys, though. They'll make a decision, and then they'll be like, here's my compliance and risk team. Like, please get through them. Like, you know, but that has to be done, right? That has to be done. So I think, you know, if you look at Block Daemon, we were the first with insurance, right? We have proper insurance, all the rewards on our staking side, we have insurance. We're insured by Marsh. We're underwritten by Realm. These are some of the leading digital asset insurance companies. A lot of the custody players use them. So we talk to them, we normally have the business conversation, then we spend a lot of time with the compliance people. And look, they've got a job to do.
Yep.
They're just assessing risk. So we very much then flip the conversation. Hey, we have insurance, here's the documents. We're the first node and staking provider with process and controls. ISO 27001, let me show you the document. Please meet my head of SecOps.
Yep.
You talk to him. Please meet my head of key management, like talk to this person. You go through the motions. And these are leading financial services companies. And, you know, we've been able to move through them, you know, and get it done. But that does take some time. So, you know, you still are spending 2-3 months in that process.
Cycle.
Yeah.
And when you're talking to these traditional finance FSI companies, what have you observed to be a key motivation for them? And like in SaaS, we used to talk about like an ideal customer profile.
Yeah.
Who has been sort of the champion at those companies in terms of moving forward on working with Block Daemon, moving into Web3 or DeFi? What has that cycle been like?
So it really starts from the top. Like, you know, there, you know, so publicly we can talk about SBI in Japan, like they're a customer of ours. We have a few others that we can't name in APAC, but globally we have Citibank, JP Morgan, Goldman Sachs, investors and customers. And so it's really started either two ways. Like the leadership team is like, hey, we need to be in here, but we need to still be our own company. We need to not do anything unnatural, right? But we need to learn this space. So we found a couple of things. The ones that are investors, what they've done and what I would recommend is they invested in us, then they put some money aside to build a small team and learn and build and work out what's the future for them in Web3. I think that's a fantastic
model.
That's
a fantastic model.
Like, they've put some money to work and they've built a team. So that's the three that we've just spoken about. That's what they've been busy doing. And they're all doing different things because they're trying to work out where's the relevance for their business. They're not just trying to jump in and... So I think that's fantastic. I think then there's several institutions in APAC. The leadership team has made public statements. And then they've asked the specific divisional leaders to work out, well, what does the future look like for them in this space as well? And kind of working
talking
through
talking more
those.
About what does the future look like? And if you were to wear your investor hat on, what does the future look like?
Well, so I think we've witnessed one of the biggest events. And I still think we don't really understand what's just happened. Ethereum moving to POS... like architecture and consensus model, like we're gonna look back on what's just happened in September.
It's gonna be a monumental.
Yeah. So we've had a lot of institutions come to us in the last few years going, look, I wanna work out access to Web3, which means access to a blockchain, which means access to a node, right? So that's what
that's the starting point.
Then we've had some institutions go, look, I like the look of Ethereum, I might like the look of a Polygon, Solana, DOT. I'm dipping my toe in the water. I don't want to make it too public, but I'm just trying. Now I think those institutions are able to take the next step forward. So because of the ESG elements of POS
chain. I actually wanted to ask a lot about that. Like how big and how critical has that been? Like before the merge, was the ESG element or that lens holding these people back? And is that really making a dramatic shift in the pace at which they now want to move ahead?
So I would reshape the sentence to say throttling. They were willing to test. They weren't willing to make a big bet because they didn't want somebody coming along and going, hey, where's the ESG element, right? So they were testing and experimenting. So I think what we're seeing now, and we are seeing this, is the institutions putting a larger quantum to work, right? Because they're like, okay, this ticks a few extra boxes, I can put this to work. And I was at the event here yesterday, which was fantastic. The thing is, the flywheel works when you've got developers, you've got the investors, right? They're building companies, then you've got institutions pushing capital in. Then develop, there's more, that fuels more developers coming in, they build more companies and there's more capital coming in. That's the flywheel, right? So I think on our side, you know, we're really excited that institutions are gonna put, what we're seeing is a higher amount of capital to work in the broader digital asset ecosystem, which will then fuel the whole thing. And I think there's a lot more confidence now that proof of stake is a thing. Obviously a block daemon, we know it's a thing, right? We know it, but Ethereum coming out and going, we're doing this and now done this successfully, there's no negotiating.
Like, it's here.
It's here. Like, this is it. Like, so I really think we're going to look back at this month as a major, major milestone. Yeah.
And going to, talking about that flywheel that we just spoke of, right? You have seen now at Block Daemon and earlier also being so closely involved with the ecosystem. You've seen multiple cycles, right? When you think of where we are today in terms of some would call it winter, some would say basically there's been a huge drawdown. We have gone from like a 3 trillion to like what, maybe 600, 700 billion.
Yeah.
Are you seeing that affecting institutions or the builder ecosystem from your vantage point,
yeah.
How has that changed life?
Yeah, that's an interesting one that takes a little, there's a little bit of layers to this and unpicking. Excuse me. So when you bring in institutions, they're actually tied to macros, fundamental public markets. So if you bring that capital in and public markets go down, it will affect digital assets. Where previously, the last cycle, institutions went in.
Went there.
So I think some project and some, you know, really crypto, digital native OG types, this, it's taken them a little bit, been a bit of a surprise to them, this cycle. But when you bring in institutions that are in the public markets and the public markets go down, that will actually have an effect in digital assets. And that's what we've seen in this cycle now. That's probably the not so positive side of bringing institutions in. You know, you're starting to tie these markets together a little bit more closely. I think then the other bit we've seen is, more savvy founders that have timed their fundraising really well.
Yeah.
Some of this is luck. Of this is like the
actually deliberately.
Yeah, they've seen the cycle. So there is so much capital in, and there's so much capital on the sidelines. Unfortunately, there's been a few projects that got caught in the middle,
yeah.
And that's unfortunate, right? But a lot of high quality founders and projects have timed this really well. Very well capitalized, that we're really excited about. Switching gears again, let me personally, I think the worst case scenario is Bitcoin halving.
Yeah, that's so true.
You know, it's really an interesting thing. Bitcoin halving reduces the supply, and that doesn't really be, it's demand driver that drives the price. But there's something psychological about the reduction of supply that drives demand, right? It is what it is. Technically, it like reducing like the supply shouldn't do that,
but it
historically
does.
It has. So I think we're jumping back to Block Daemon. Look, we're really excited about the Ethereum front,
yeah.
Like and what's happened here, and we think this is going to be super positive. On the personal side, like I tell projects and founders, I'm like, look, worst case is probably Bitcoin halving time. Well, whatever, 600, 580, 600 days away from that.
Yeah.
But I actually think like we're going to get back to a really positive market momentum before then. So that's my personal backstop.
Yeah. And you mentioned that, Gen 3 chains, Block Daemon was early to it. And then we've had, at least from India, we've had companies like Polygon emerge, right?
Yeah.
And then we've been looking at Solana also. The entire sidechain, L2, whatever you want to term it, right? That ecosystem has been growing. When Block Daemon is working with its customers, what is the sort of warming up that you see? Ethereum is here, that's the future, that's
yeah.
going to happen. But what is the perception of institutions when they think of Solana, when they think of Polygon? Are they warming up? What's happening?
Yeah. So I think it's important to note, so Block Daemon, we're multi-chain.
Yep.
We, we're currently supporting 63 different protocols. We have this amazing engineering function, and we'll add another 5 or 6 protocols kind of every quarter. And this is very early, right? So we're going to support a lot of protocols. We engage with each one. If we find there's a mutual fit, we like to support them. So we want to be really clear that we think it's a multi-chain.
It's a multi-chain universe.
World, right? I think. But then there's personas, either, on the kind of light side personas bordering to sort of like, semi-religious beliefs, and everyone's kind of on the spectrum on that front as well. And then I think, so we're just super excited around the Polygon ecosystem. I've got a personal bias for India, builders that come out of India just operators, right?
Yeah.
And I think what Polygon's done has shown people in India, guys, like we can do this.
Yeah.
Like this can be done. So I'm just super excited about the India ecosystem. And I think, it's amazing what Sandeep and the team have done to just, we were talking about it before. There's a place in the digital asset market. It's really like up for India to like have to lose it.
Yep.
So I think that infrastructure layer is really interesting. super exciting place to be for India and Indian founders, developers, engineers. I think also, so that's that piece. I think on the institution side, the Ethereum story is the easiest one for them to execute off. So there's, when I talk to institutions, there's usually a difference between what they personally like and what they're going to do, what's the institution going to execute on. We're back to a risk conversation. We're back to risk and compliance. You know, how can I get my, you know, my chief risk officer over the line?
Over the line on this one.
So I think, you know, we've seen definitely a large set of interest in Ethereum. And then, you know, whatever you want to call it, let's, you know, I like to think of it as like the blue chip Gen 3 chains.
Yeah.
Right? Then we're seeing, we're definitely seeing some Ethereum. Then we're seeing some Polkadot, some Solana, you know, some of the L2s, so like a Polygon. So these institutions are placing a basket bet because institutions won't just do one bet.
Yeah.
Right? They, you know, largely can't do that. So they're doing a sort of basket approach. And there's definitely that sort of top 15 sort of chains.
Emerging, the blue chip is getting pretty much qualified and built out.
Yeah, and then to their own personal preferences and risk profiles, they're choosing their allocation. And then what we're seeing is, you know, there's institutions with trading DNA, and, you know, we'll usually encourage them, like, what's your DNA, what's your ethos? If it's trading, okay, we'd encourage you to put a bit, like, lock up a little bit and put it to staking and earn a yield that way. And then we're seeing some institutions that are more longer term, buy and hold. And so we're actually seeing them come into the ecosystem, make a fairly large allocation by investment quantum, and then work with us and then just stake it, right? And then that's how they're thinking about things as well. So I don't think, there's no one size fits all here, right? But I definitely think there's the trend lines around probably the top sort of 15 chains, different allocations by institution, and then what they're doing. Is it largely staking? Is it a smaller allocation to staking? But we're definitely seeing that probably the common denominator is the top blue chip and a percentage of that put at stake. Yeah.
And lastly, talking about trend lines, right? I think you mentioned that you do have also an ecosystem fund, Blocktaping runs it. You've made some M&A also, we spoke about Sapio. When you think of, and this is more to help our founders think through it, right? When they are thinking of the staking node institutional ecosystem, what are some interesting trend lines that you see now which could play out and which could potentially be great trend lines for young founders to go after?
Yeah. So a couple of things. Yeah, Blockteam has a very small ecosystem fund. And we'll use that to drive strategic alignment, right? Very small checks and very much only if the founder's building something that aligns clearly to our vision and mission of connecting institutions to blockchain and helping institutions earn rewards by staking. So we won't, even if we see something that looks like a fantastic investment but doesn't align, we won't do that. It's not for us, right? So, we, you know. What we're seeing though, and you know, is a lot of founders, this is so early. This is just so early. There is so much to build at the infrastructure layer that will enable NFTs and GameFi and trading and like the financialization of all this ecosystem that we're just seeing projects come that are building the, you know, either the Web3 equivalent function or they're building something to drive, you know, higher availability or performance, you know, at the infrastructure layer. So I just encourage founders to be thinking about, like, what does this ecosystem need, right, truly? Like, you know, we should be going, there's so many opportunities for painkillers over vitamins, right? And how can you build a large business here? And you know, where is that fit gonna be? Like, that's the conversation. You know this on the SaaS side, like there's a lot of SaaS being built, that's being built on Web2. So it's very difficult now in a Web2 world to find a huge, like, you know, broad kind of untapped kind of market opportunity. There's some fantastic new SaaS companies that are super deep, but they're
point solutions.
Yeah, point solutions. I think if you jump back to Web3, you've got this opportunity for very large kind of market, you know, segment share type kind of building opportunities. So I think that's what's exciting a lot of founders. There's just so much space to build here. And there's so many things that people need that don't exist. Yeah.
And Andrew, lastly, we'll see each other in Singapore soon, but last question. As for you as an individual, what is that one line, if you were to put out for the Web3 ecosystem, which excites you the most? Like, this is the one thing which I'm most excited about. What would that be?
There's just so much to build. I think what excites me is, like, you know, from my career, like, there's just so much opportunity. The best stuff is ahead of us.
It's ahead of us.
Like, that's what I'm excited about. And that's what gets me up in the morning. And that's what I just love about this opportunity at Block Demon and the broader Web3 space. There's just so much ahead of us. Yeah.
And on that note, we'll wrap this up. Thanks, Andrew.
Thank you.
And I do agree, there's lots more ahead of us.
Yeah.
And we look forward to collaborating a lot more, both with you and the Block Demon team. And thank you for your trip in India.
Thanks for having us. Thanks a lot.
Thank you for tuning in. Bye.
Thanks for tuning in. For more Matrix Moments episodes, you can head to www.matrixpartners.in/matrixmoments. You can also follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube for more updates.